Good afternoon. It's 4:30 and 34 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Arlo Barnett.
And I'm Jacob Lindberg.
Getting the $10.2 million for the riverfront development was an accomplishment that I'll cherish forever.
Larry Brown says development of Ashland's riverfront was one of the city's proudest moments over the past 16 years. Brown retires as city commissioner at the end of this month.
Damage is being assessed from eastern Kentucky's recent wildfires. The Cumberland District isn't too bad off.
And cold weather and possible snow has regional road crews gearing up for winter maintenance.
In sports, the Rowan County girls basketball team plays for the EKC Championship tonight.
Bud Luke brings us the stocks.
A chance of flurries tonight with lows in the upper teens. The complete forecast is coming up after this news.
Unlike other parts of the Daniel Boone National Forest, its Cumberland District didn't lose nearly as many acres of woodland to recent wildfires. That word comes from John Kazmierski, who is the district's ranger. Kazmierski says his section of the Daniel Boone lost less than 250 acres of timber to the blazes, most of them in the Tunnel Ridge Road Fire in the Red River Gorge.
It was started by a campfire that was a camper had when the burn ban was in place, and that campfire somehow got out of control and consumed 200 acres. It ended in the resulting in people not being able to drive down Tunnel Road for several weeks.
Kazmierski credits the lack of blazes in the Cumberland District to the public's response to fire prevention media campaigns done by the U.S. Forest Service and the Kentucky Division of Forestry during the recent drought.
Kentucky State Police and the State Fire Marshal are continuing their probe into the cause of a house fire in Elliott County Wednesday that killed two people. A man who lives near the structure along P. Wagoner Road says he heard several blasts during the blaze. Danny Carter spoke with WLEX.
Explosions, gas tanks, propanes, gas, whatever she had in there, whatever they had in there. There could have been some shells going off. There was all kinds of shots going off and noises.
The preliminary investigation has not led to suspicion of foul play or arson. The bodies of the victims are being examined by the State Crime Lab in Frankfort.
A drug investigation has resulted in the arrest of three people in Boyd County. WSAZ reports that Boyd County Sheriff's Department arrested 44-year-old Donetta Gullett and 36-year-old Tanya Rowe of Ashland yesterday, as well as 57-year-old Robert Hope of Elizabethtown. Hope and Gullett are accused of possession of methamphetamine and trafficking a controlled substance. Rowe is charged with complicity to trafficking a controlled substance. All three are being held in the Boyd County Detention Center. Authorities say more arrests are pending in the investigation.
Crews from the Kentucky Department of Highways District 9 office in Flemingsburg are ready for whatever Old Man Winter throws at them. Spokesman Alan Blair says they've got their trucks and plows ready for snow removal work, and the district has stockpiled about 18,000 tons of road salt. In addition to that, Blair says officials have made decisions regarding District 9's priority routes for plowing.
We can hit the most heavily traveled roads first and try to get them as clear as we can and then move on to the priority B and C routes. So that's our typical route plan, and we take a look at the maps and determine, what's the most critical routes that we need to keep open that go to the hospitals or other areas that need to be treated maybe ahead of other roads.
Blair says crews from District 9 will take turns being on 24-hour readiness shifts from now until early spring in case a potential snowstorm hits the area.
Ashland Fire Chief Scott Pinnick will retire next month. Pinnick has been with the department for more than 25 years, the last nine as chief. His decision leaves the new city commission that takes office in January with a second key post to fill. The city manager's position is also vacant. Commissioners hope to tap the new manager by March of next year. They'll advertise the position January 2nd. Former city manager Steve Corbett is doing the job on an interim basis.
Ashland Commissioner-elect Matt Perkins says the hiring of a new city manager will probably be the biggest decision commissioners have to make next year, and will likely come in the first quarter. He says it's important the position be filled as soon as possible.
We've been without one for over a year. We've had some interims, of course, but we want to pick somebody that is focused on accountability, fiscal responsibility, will be a cheerleader for our community.
Perkins says the new manager should understand Ashland's unique characteristics and be a champion for the city.
The end of this month will mark the close of Larry Brown's 25 years of public service to the city of Ashland. Brown did not run for re-election this fall after 8 terms as city commissioner. Prior to that, he held a seat on the Ashland School Board for 9 years and was also its president.
A lot of positive things happened that in our school system. The graduation rate had gone up, and we were attracting excellent teachers, and we had great sporting programs, a lot of good things. I enjoyed that part of being an elected official, and but probably dealing with the people's most prized possession, their children.
As a city commissioner, Brown says he's especially proud of Ashland's riverfront development and the rebound of its downtown business district.
As Rauman County adds more residents, its school district will be prepared to handle any influx of new students. So says Superintendent Marvin Moore. Experts are predicting Rauman will add a few thousand residents in the next 15 years. Most of that growth is expected to take place in the western part of the county. According to Moore, the Rauman school system could build a new elementary, if needed, on a 24-acre site it purchased 4 years ago from a local industrial authority.
I foresee in the future that would be an outstanding location for an elementary, because, as you mentioned, that area is really growing out there. And, of course, that would be a few years down the road, the old saying goes. But I think that that would be a tremendous piece of property, of land out there, to look at for a potential school site.
Moore also notes the Rauman School Board also still has on the table a possible plan to renovate the district's former middle school in downtown Moorhead and turn it into a new elementary school.
The Johnson County School District will be receiving an award from the Kentucky School Boards Association tomorrow, MSPR's Jacob Wilson reports.
According to the Daily Independent, the district will get the KSBA's Peak Award during a ceremony at its middle school. It established the honor in 1997 to focus statewide attention on outstanding efforts made by schools to help build public student learning skills and thus promote the positive impact of public K-12 education in the state. The Johnson District is being rewarded for its Student Opportunities with Awe-Inspiring Results program. As part of the SOAR program, the Johnson School Board has committed $100,000 in the last 3 decades to the district's successful academic teams. Reporting for Moorhead State Public Radio, I'm Jacob Wilson.
Governor Matt Bevin says people are overreacting to the news that the University of Louisville's accreditation was renewed with a year of probation. The probation comes in response to issues with Board of Trustees membership policies, standards related to selection and evaluation of the university president, external influence, and the governor's Board of Trustees dismissal earlier this year. Bevin says if there is any concern about undue influence, it is likely due to the makeup of the current board, which is out of compliance with state law. He spoke on the Terry Miners Show.
We don't even know the specifics of what the probation is for. We won't know until January. So I love all the experts that are immediately sure that it's because of this, that, or the other thing. It is a non-issue. It will be resolved as soon as we put a legally constructed board in place, which is what I attempted to do in the summer and was handcuffed.
Bevin went on to compare Attorney General Andy Beshear to a little cicada making noise about the issue. Beshear took the governor to court over his executive action reordering the U of L board. The move was overturned by a circuit court judge, but Bevin is appealing the case.
The House has approved a bill co-sponsored by a Kentucky congressman that enhances congressional oversight of international insurance standards. Lexington Republican Andy Barr believes Congress should have robust oversight on any insurance guidelines.
The Transparent Insurance Standards Act achieves just that. The legislation sets clear objectives or rules of the road for the Federal Insurance Office and the Federal Reserve that must be met during negotiation and ultimately adoption of any international insurance standards or covered agreements.
Barr says the bill calls for federal regulators to seek public comment and get input from state officials and Congress before establishing insurance standards.
Somerset Congressman Hal Rogers is urging his House colleagues to vote for a $1 trillion continuing resolution to keep the government running through April of next year. The Republican lawmaker made his pitch Wednesday to the House Rules Committee, even though he also told the panel that continuing resolutions are a lousy way to fund the government.
Governing by CR is no way to conduct our business. With a CR, we're wasting money and preventing good policies from going into place. We're creating uncertainty, both in our federal budgets and in the economy. And we're ceding our power of the purse, throwing away the voice of the people that we represent.
Nevertheless, Rogers says the government funding bill now before the House is the best way to keep Uncle Sam in business for the next 4 months. Rogers chairs the House Appropriations and Revenue Committee.
Lewis County Congressman Thomas Massey thinks federal officials should have to list the reasons when they classify or withhold certain information in government reports. The Republican lawmaker made the comment today during a hearing of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. The panel is looking into the government's classification rules and procedures. Massey suspects too much information is being withheld without justification.
One of the things that I would think would help is to know the reason for the redaction. There's certain reasons that might be legitimate. It may be a law that says when you redact large swaths or even small portions that you have to give the reason. If the reason is to avoid embarrassment or to protect a source or to protect somebody who may not be guilty, their public reputation, just disclose it. And then the crime or the infraction could be that you lied about the reason.
Massey says redacting information from government reports can change the narrative of those communications. That's why he says it's important to know the reasons for doing so.
The man chosen by President-elect Donald Trump to run the Environmental Protection Agency has ties to Central Kentucky. Will Clark reports.
Trump is expected to nominate current Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt to lead the EPA. Before moving to Tulsa to attend law school, Pruitt grew up in Lexington and earned a scholarship to play baseball at the University of Kentucky. He then went on to earn a bachelor's degree in communications and political science from Georgetown College. He's been a booster of the fossil fuel industry and an outspoken critic of what he calls the EPA's activist agenda and denies overwhelming evidence the earth is warming because of man-made carbon emissions. I'm Will Clark.
The Kentucky Department of Revenue is reminding taxpayers to watch out for phishing scams. This has been a growing problem in the Commonwealth, and along with the IRS, the Department of Revenue is using National Tax Security Awareness Week to provide tips on how to recognize and prevent being the victims of con artists. Pamela Troutner is the KDR spokeswoman.
You may get a call that is very urgent saying that you as a taxpayer need to call back and settle a tax bill, and they need a credit card number or a gift card, and they need payment immediately. That is a scamming call. You may receive an email asking for you to confirm PIN numbers or your Social Security numbers. Just remember that the Kentucky Department of Revenue and the IRS would never ask for that information in an email or a phone call.
Trotner says it's also important to keep your information secured, especially on your computer. For more information, you can go to www.irs.gov.
Your weather for tonight: cold, partly cloudy in the evening, then mostly cloudy, flurries possible late, lows in the upper teens. On Friday, partly sunny with flurries possible in the morning, highs in the upper 20s. Friday night, cold and partly cloudy with lows from 15 to 20 degrees. On Saturday, mostly sunny with highs in the lower 30s. Saturday night, mostly cloudy with lows in the mid-20s. In Ashland right now, it's 37 degrees. In Flemingsburg, 33 degrees. Inez, 37 degrees. Lexington, 33. Winchester, 33. And here in Moorhead, on MSU's campus, it's 34 degrees.
The time is 4:44. You're tuned in to Mountain Edition on Moorhead State Public Radio. On our feature segment, we have commentary from MSU professor Rick Carrick. He says personal relationships are bound to change in a politically divided country like ours.
One of the more interesting subplots emerging from last November's election is whether white progressives are ever going to talk to their Trump-voting relatives again. I may exaggerate a little, but there are reports from all over the country of progressives unfriending Trump supporters on Facebook, changing holiday plans to avoid conservative relatives, and otherwise cutting themselves off from camaraderie with people on the right. In fact, I've done all these things myself. I don't have any close friends who would have voted for Trump, but I've unfriended some Facebook friends and taken a break from others. I'll be traveling past several conservative siblings on the way to Florida on Saturday, but they'll be lucky to get cards, let alone visits. There's been a fair amount of surprise over the intensity of the anger over Trump's election among white people on the left. I've seen that surprise from arguments on Facebook, conservative writers for the National Review, and even some black commentators. I'm not sure why, though. Donald Trump is a sex predator, peeping Tom, and con man. He's not just a racist, but he's been flamboyantly racist towards blacks, Hispanics, and Muslims, while his campaign single-handedly brought anti-Semitic hatred of Jews back into the public sphere. Trump's also the kind of buffoon who bragged about how he would have dated Ivanka if she hadn't been his daughter. Voting for Trump wasn't just deplorable, it was despicable. And any moral person, not just white progressives, would be obligated to reconsider their connections with Trump's supporters. Of course, this didn't just happen overnight. The white population in the United States has been dividing into mutually hostile, progressive, and conservative tribes since the 1990s at least. Just before the 2008 election, former Herald Leader reporter Bill Bishop wrote in The Big Sort that white progressives and conservatives were beginning to move away from each other geographically and concentrate in politically similar neighborhoods and regions. If anything, the Obama years have accelerated that trend as more white progressives move to multicultural urban areas while white conservatives sink even deeper into evangelical churches, gun stockpiles, and nostalgia for the manufacturing economy and white-dominated politics of the 50s. Commentators bemoan the increasing geographical and cultural distance between white progressives and conservatives, and African-American writers in particular urge white progressives to stay in touch with their conservative contacts in the hope that some sort of mutual understanding will develop in the future. But I don't see that happening. If the 2016 election has shown anything, it's the power of bigotry and the lack of moral principles among the 45-46% of voters who supported Trump. In my opinion, white progressives would be better off if they left conservatives behind and became better friends and allies with the African Americans, Hispanics, immigrant populations, feminists, and gay rights activists who are going to be the prime targets of the Trump administration and its supporters. Becoming more closely tied to minority friends and allies involves a number of issues for progressives whose lives have been as shaped by white privilege as any other white people. Progressives would do well to expand their personal allegiances, shared culture, and political alliances with other groups in America's democratic multicultural coalition while continuing to loosen their bonds with the white conservative world. That way, there's a chance that we can emerge as a better country after the dark days of the Trump administration.
Dr. Rick Carrick is a professor of international and interdisciplinary studies at Morehead State University. The time is 4:49. You're still listening to Mountain Edition. Sports is up next after this quick timeout.
Support for MSPR comes from Coffee Tree Books and the Fuzzy Duck Coffee Shop, promoting literacy and reading in the MSPR listening area since 1978. Coffee Tree Books, where books are ordered every day and special orders can easily be accommodated, featuring a variety of gifts, cards, locally made crafts, and now a complete yarn shop, a community bookstore located at 159 East Main Street in Morehead. The Fuzzy Duck Coffee Shop and Coffee Tree Books are open Monday through Saturday, online, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Good afternoon with Morehead State Public Radio Sports. I'm Braxton Howard. Round County squares off with Russell tonight in the girls' championship game of the EKC tournament in Grayson. Coach Elaine Douglas says the contest is another chance for her to learn more about her 2-1 Lady Vikings, who lost several key seniors after last season.
You got more kids than I've had. And they've had there for 4 or 5 years, but, you know, getting five that work well together, you know, to at least start on the floor is a different animal. You know, when you lose that many seniors, it's kind of rebuilding.
While Round is 2-1 this season, Russell is off to a 3-1 start. On the boys' side of things, Russell and Wes Carter will battle for the championship. The Morehead State basketball Eagles are wrapping up finals this week and preparing for a two-game road trip. They will visit Lipscomb Saturday, then travel to Eastern Washington for a contest next Tuesday. MSU has lost five straight, but acting head coach Preston Spradlin says the Eagles continue to make progress and haven't lost faith in the process.
I think they believe in what we're doing as a whole, and I hope they continue to do that, which is hard. It's a hard thing to do, but we just got to stick with it.
MSU will be matched up Saturday with the Lipscomb team that it beat last month at Johnson Arena, 89-75. Kentucky basketball coach John Calipari is generally happy with what he saw from his sixth-ranked Wildcats during their 87-63 blowout win at home over Valparaiso. While saying his players weren't perfect last night, Cal notes he demanded the Cats play with energy, and they did.
I was happy with the effort, and if someone didn't play, I saw them. You're out. You're either playing like there's no tomorrow, and that doesn't mean foul and go nuts. It means you're playing with unbelievable energy or you're out. I'm playing somebody else.
UK held Valpo to 34% shooting last night and turned the Crusaders over 19 times. Bam Adebayo's 16 points and 7 rebounds pasted the 8-1 Wildcats. Former University of Kentucky basketball coach Billy Gillespie is retiring because of health concerns, according to the Dallas Morning News. The 57-year-old Gillespie was in his second season at Ranger Junior College. He coached at Kentucky from 2007 to 2009. Kentucky football fans are excited about the Cats bowl game in Jacksonville. UK has already sold out its allotment of tickets to the Tax Slayer Bowl. Head coach Mark Stoops says that the support from the fans is what is driving his program to take the next step up.
We have a phenomenal fan base. They are certainly very energetic, very passionate. So there's no excuses. We need to take our game to another level. We're proud to be here, participate in this bowl game. But our fans have been phenomenal. Our administration has been absolutely phenomenal. And for us and for football, there's no excuses because we have the support, we have the facilities, and we're well on our way.
The Cats take on Georgia Tech in the Tax Slayer Bowl on December the 31st. Trailing by one game in the AFC West, the Kansas City Chiefs have a chance to make a significant move in the division as they host the Oakland Raiders in Thursday Night Football. AP correspondent Greg Eklund reports.
A Kansas City victory would mean identical records, but more important for the Chiefs, they would own two victories over the Raiders. The Chiefs beat them 26-10 on October 16th. It would also keep the Chiefs' record against division rivals unblemished in four games. In their most recent game in Atlanta, the Chiefs created a turnover to win. Kansas City is first in the NFL in takeaways. Greg Eklund, Kansas City.
The Cincinnati Bengals will be looking for a season sweep of Cleveland when they visit the Browns on Sunday. The Bengals breeze by their Ohio rivals on October the 23rd at Paul Brown Stadium, 31-17. Head coach Marvin Lewis doesn't expect the winless Browns to look anything like they did earlier in the season.
Well, it'll be a little different, you know, if you go back to the first game of the year, you know, where they obviously had their preparation in for opening the season and what they wanted to do with Robert at quarterback. And, you know, so you have an opportunity to see the things that they felt were going to be a part or a staple in their offense.
Speaking of RG3, he is expected to start this Sunday at quarterback for Cleveland. And finally, in sports, the GM and head of baseball operations for the Cincinnati Reds admits the team's rebuilding effort over the last couple of years hasn't been easy. Dick Williams tells MLB.com that getting rid of several popular players in order to build for the future has been a rough ride at times, but he believes that effort will pay off in the long run.
We took advantage of the opportunity to get some young players back. We drafted high in the draft, second pick, and we came out of it with a really good draft. And so we do feel very optimistic about the core of young players. And I think our fans are in for some excitement the next couple of years.
The Reds have yet to make a deal at baseball's winter meetings, but a number of teams have expressed interest in pitcher Anthony DeSclafani and center fielder Billy Hamilton. That's it for sports. For Morehead State Public Radio, I'm Braxton Howard.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics. Single game and season tickets for men's and women's basketball are now on sale, including 16 OVC contests beginning January 5th, with a doubleheader hosting Eastern Illinois. Tickets and more information from the MSU Eagle Ticket Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the national offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. U.S. equities closed higher, notching fresh record highs as a post-election rally continued following a key monetary policy announcement from the European Central Bank. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average finished with a gain of 65.19 at 19,614.81. And, of course, that is a new all-time record high for the Dow. The S&P 500 was up 4.84 at 2246.19, and the NASDAQ Composite was up 23.59, finishing at 5417.36. New York Stock Exchange breadth was roughly 18 to 11 in favor of winning stocks over losers. The ECB was very big in the news today as they extended their quantitative easing program until December 2017, but will reduce purchases from 80 billion euros to 60 billion euros per month. And ECB President Mario Draghi said uncertainty prevails everywhere, but added that the risk of deflation has largely disappeared. Meanwhile, in terms of equities in Europe, stock markets were strong as the pan-European Stock 600 index advanced more than 1%. There was good news out of China as well, as China's November dollar-denominated imports grew 6.7%, the fastest pace of annualized growth since September 2013, while exports were up 0.1% in dollar terms, and both of these numbers very much above what analysts had expected going into the reports. And Asian markets were very strong today as a result. In the oil markets, U.S. crude futures for January delivery rose 2.15%, settling at $50.84 a barrel. According to First Standard's Peter Cardillo, the prices were receiving a boost in part because of solid economic data from China. In the oil markets, U.S. crude futures for January delivery rose 2.15%, settling at $50.84 per barrel, and traders said that the solid economic news from China gave oil some strength today as well. And gold futures for February delivery fell $5.10, settling at $1,172.40 per ounce. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was Ashland Incorporated up 32 cents at 115.02, CSX up 9 cents at 37.22, AEP down 8 cents at 60.17, AK Steel down 6 cents at 10.73, Marathon Petroleum up 41 cents at 50.06, and Valvoline was down 23 cents to finish at $20.01. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Support for MSPR comes from the Community Recycling Center in Moorhead. Funded in part through a grant from the Kentucky Division of Waste Management, a second green recycling trailer will be rotating among Elliottville, Hayes Crossing, Farmers, and at the MMRC Fire Department on Kentucky 801 North. In addition, a green recycling trailer will always be located across from Walmart in the parking lot at the community park. The rotating trailer schedule is online at moorheadrecycling.org. Your weather for tonight, cold, partly cloudy in the evening, then mostly cloudy, flurries possible late, lows in the upper teens. On Friday, partly sunny with flurries possible in the morning, highs in the upper 20s. On Friday night, cold, partly cloudy, lows 15 to 20 degrees. On Saturday, mostly sunny with highs in the lower 30s. Saturday night, mostly cloudy with lows in the mid-20s. On Sunday, cloudy with rain showers likely. Highs in the lower 40s, chance of rain is at 60%. And on Sunday night, cloudy with rain showers likely, lows in the mid-30s, chance of rain is at 70%. In Ashland right now, it's 37 degrees, in Flemingsburg, 33 degrees, Inez, 37, Lexington, 33, Winchester, 33, and here in Moorhead on MSU's campus, it's 34 degrees.
And that'll do it for Mountain Edition this afternoon. We had help from Chuck Mraz, Dan Conti, Nathan Gutierrez, Braxton Howard, Chaz Jenkins, and Jacob Wilson. From the Kentucky News Network, Will Clark, and with our feature commentary, MSU Professor Rick Carrick. This is Moorhead State Public Radio, WMKY Moorhead, and translator W202BH Inez. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Jacob Lindberg and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Arlo Barnett, Moorhead State Public Radio News. All Things Considered is coming up next. It's 5 o'clock.